for about half an hour as his RAF jet was over the Russian territory of Kaliningrad. One of America's most senior Jewish politicians has claimed Israel's prime minister has lost his way. Senate leader Chuck Schumer is calling for elections, adding there must be a ceasefire in Gaza and the freeing of hostages being held by Hamas. Our US correspondent Mark Stone says the White House was informed Mr. Schumer would be making the speech.
Admiral John Kirby has said to us, Leader Schumer clearly feels strongly about this and certainly will let him speak for his comments. We're going to stay focused on making sure that Israel has what it needs to defend itself while doing everything they can to avoid civilian casualties.
Community Secretary Michael Gove has named several groups, some with alleged Islamist connections and others on the far right, that will be investigated. One of them is the Muslim Association of Britain, which he says is the British affiliate of the Muslim Brotherhood. Spokeswoman Yasmin Adams says Mr. Gove should have spoken outside the Commons.
It's no surprising that he's chosen to hide behind parliamentary privilege to assert baseless accusations if he has any shred of evidence for any of his claims. He wouldn't hide behind parliamentary privilege, and we would be more than happy to challenge it legally.
Mr. Gove says there's no intention to restrict freedom of expression, religion, or belief. A boy has admitted killing a 15-year-old girl who was stabbed to death on her way to school in South London, but prosecutors have rejected the 17-year-old's plea of manslaughter, and he'll stand trial for Elaine Andam's murder. There's been a sharp rise in people hospitalised with norovirus. The number of patients in England with related symptoms such as diarrhoea and vomiting was up 45% last week. And tonight's Europa League last 16 action has just got underway. West Ham are 1-0 with Freiburg on aggregate after an early goal. Rangers are tied 2-2 on aggregate against Benfica. That's the latest. I'm Chris Milligan.
This is Phoenix FM.
Weather on Phoenix FM, proudly sponsored by SEHBAC, the award-winning home improvement company for windows, doors, conservatories and extensions.
Well, for once, I've not driven into the studio through wind, rain and floods. It's actually quite nice out there. However, tonight we'll see scattered showers pushing in from the west in places with variable cloud and some clear spells too. It will be another mild night. Staying a bit breezy, lows of 11 degrees centigrade. Into Friday and tomorrow looks to continue with variable cloud cover. There'll be some bright spells and scattered showers blowing in from the west. These might be heavy at times. It will, however, stay mild and that breezy conditions will stick around. Highs of 14 degrees centigrade.
Weather on Phoenix FM, sponsored by SEHBAC, the award-winning home improvement company, proudly serving Essex for over 50 years. Contact us on 0800 666 444 or visit sehbac.com for help with your home.
Phoenix FM travel news.
Well, there's a few bits and pieces out there, it being rush hour and all that. Let's start in Chipping Ongar. There's slow-moving traffic on the High Street northbound towards the A414 Chelmsford Road. On the A131 northbound, it's slow through Halstead Town Centre. On the A12 northbound is slow between Junction 17, that's for the A130, and Junction 19 for the A130 in Boreham. On the M25 anti-clockwise, it's slow approaching the Dartford Tunnel due to an earlier issue within the tunnel. There's congestion all the way back to Junction 3, that's for the M20. In Chelmsford, it's slow moving on Baddow Road towards the Army and Navy roundabout. The A13 has one lane closed due to roadworks and the speed limit in place between the Five Bells interchange, that's for the A176, and the Pitsea flyover at A132. On the tubes, there are minor delays on the central line between White City and Ealing, and over the other end, Leytonstone and Epping due to faulty trains. There are also minor delays on the Hammersmith and City lines heading west. It's a good service elsewhere. And on the trains, no problems on Greater Anglia or C2C. Watch out for middle-aged pot-bellied men bowling up and down the High Street as they head to a pub to watch the West Ham game. currently 1-0 to West Ham, 1-1 on aggregate against SC Freiburg. My thanks to Jo Bailey for Drive. She's back tomorrow. She's gutted she can't be at the West Ham game.
And online. This is Phoenix FM.
It's 5 minutes past 6 o'clock on a Thursday evening. Welcome along to Phoenix FM. It's me, Darren Mutu, here till 7 with an hour of cricket news, chat and entertainment. You listen to Phoenix FM 98 on the FM dial in the Essex area. You can listen via the internet, phoenixfm.com. Click on Listen Live. Or if you've got a smart speaker handy, just shout, play Phoenix FM. And you'll hear my dulcet tones coming through loud and clear. And I've just posted the Listen Live link on the 98 and About Twitter page. And remember, if you want to get in touch tonight, email radio at phoenixfm.com. Title your mail 98 and About. And let me know what you think. You can also use social media messaging functions. 98 and About is on Facebook, Twitter and Instagram. Always glad to hear what your thoughts are. And good evening to my old mate Dan Hagger, who's locked in already, very keen. On tonight's show, chief cricket writer at the Daily Mail, Paul Newman, joins us all the way from Dharamsala to give his verdicts on England's difficult winter. Catching up on the news, there's some news from the IPL with returns. There's a bit of comings and goings at the counties as the season gets ever, ever nearer. The players, them in a full suit a while. And don't forget, head to the phoenixfm.com website and subscribe for free to the newsletter. You will find out everything that's going on at this wonderful station, all the programmes, all the presenters. 7 days a week, everyone volunteers, everyone chips in. Not everyone's as amateur as me. And make sure you give it your full support. All right, a packed show tonight. I think we better get into it. It's cricket birthdays of the week. Starting off with Mohammed Shami, 34. Samuel Badri, 43. Colin Munro, 37. Tammy Beaumont, 33. Tom Curran, 29. Matt Renshaw, who's just signed for Somerset, turns 28. Windies legend L. Dean Baptiste, 64. Another Indian quick bowler, Mohammed Siraj, 30. Dinesh Ramdin, 39. Neil Wagner, 38. Essex skipper Tom Wesley, 35. And former Essex spinner Tim Phillips, 43. James Vince, 33. Bruce Reid, 61. Jake Ball, 33. Essex CEO John Stevenson, 59. Former West Indies terror Colin Croft, 71. Australia's Ben Hilfenhaus, 41. Umpire Richard Kettleborough, 51. Joe Denley, 38. Heath Street, 50. And Otis Gibson, 55. And not forgetting listeners, JJ Hassan, 62. Jordan McManus is 12 years old, apparently, according to his friends. I don't think he is. And friend of the show and a lady taverner, Bianca Westwood, known to all of you Soccer Saturday fans. It was at 50 this week. Yes, 50. Happy birthday to all of those. And remember, if you want to get your name or someone you know added to the birthday list, email radio at phoenixfm.com. Title your mail 19 or out birthdays. and you will get straight through to the show, and I will read them out as they appear. Okay, let's just get some music. This is Björk.
Across Brentwood and Billericay, this is Phoenix FM.
Hello to Darren and the listeners of 98 Not Out. Just to let you know that the March issue of the Cricketer magazine is out now, and the centrepiece is a superb deep dive by Sam Morshead into county finances. We also have Monty Panesar writing about his favourite cricketer, Sachin Tendulkar. And making up the lineup is David Gower, Mike Brearley, Nasser Hussain, George DeBell, Kieran Pollard and Tanya Aldred. That's the March issue of the Cricketer magazine, out now.
The March tradition of County Cricket Matters is now out. It has an interview with James Woo of Somerset. It also has articles by the wonderful writer David Woodhouse and articles by Alan Wilkins. Lots more. And of course there's a crossword. Do subscribe. It's a fantastic bargain at £3.
Across Brentwood and Billericay, this is Phoenix FM.
You're listening to 98 Out on Phoenix FM. It's 6:15. I'm going to start with an important notice which has come from the ECB today, and it is, well, it's very disturbing. We've identified an issue with items used in our All-Stars and Dynamos programmes. Out of an abundance of caution, we advise that All-Stars and Dynamos balls, Dynamos batting tee and PVC banners should no longer be used. For full details, head to the ECB Twitter page. That's at ECB_cricket. But it's quite worrying that it's taken this long for them to realise that. But they have found the problem and they have identified it. So if you are a club or you are a parent and you're involved with any of those schemes, the All-Stars or the Dynamos, get in touch with your local club and check on the ECB website and just make sure that you are up to speed with everything that is going on.
Go to phoenixfm.com and listen to online guest interviews. Check the events for your area and listen to great radio online.
Right, let's get into the guest tonight, Mr. Paul Newman, who's been with the show on and off since the very beginning. I haven't had him for a little while, so I thought I'd catch up with him and just get his thoughts on England's tricky winter. We head over to India now, where I'm joined by my old mate, Paul Newman, who has just witnessed the finale of the long and difficult tour out in India. In fact, it's been a long and difficult winter for England. Paul, what are your thoughts with the winter over?
Well, Darren, as you say, if you look at it statistically, England have had a terrible winter. They've had their worst winter since 2013-14, really. If you look at it closely, they were terrible in the World Cup, didn't get beyond the group stage. Then they lost both the T20 and one-day series in West Indies, and now they've lost this Test series 4-1. I don't think that's the whole story by any means. I do think that they've had their moments in this Test series. They've challenged India. They've pushed them at times, but they haven't taken their opportunities. They did have opportunities, especially in the third and fourth Test. And I really thought that it should have been 2-2 going into this final Test, but once it was 3-1, then I think that was all over, and England were poor in this final Test. They said they weren't looking towards the flight home, but they played as if they were at the end of a very long winter, which they are. They won the toss. It was a flat pitch. They were 100-1 just before lunch. Then Ollie Pope got out, and it was downhill from there. And that's been the story of the series, really. We know that India are phenomenal at home. You know, they haven't lost here for 18 series now. Haven't lost since 2012 when Alistair Cook's team beat them here. So we know how hard it is to win here. But I do think England will look back on this as a case of what might have been.
Yeah, it was a golden opportunity. What with Virat Kohli missing and India deciding to sort of rest one or two key players along the way. It might have been a chance to pull something out of the fire. But as you say, India, people never need to underestimate how difficult it is going out there.
Yeah, and they've got such strength in depth, haven't they? I mean, I hadn't seen too much of Yashasvi Jaiswal before this series, but what a player. You know, he was just absolutely magnificent, a product of the IPL. He's got a fabulous backstory, and he was just sensational. And he scored more runs in a series, I think, than any India batsman has ever scored against England. And when you think of some of the greats over the years, that's quite an achievement. Was it 23 sixes he hit alone? We had a press conference with Brendan McCullum today, and he said, well, India beat us at our own game. And that was true. England have tried to be the entertainers. They've tried to play positive cricket for the last couple of years, and they have done. We know how good Bazball has been. But at the same time, you know, having started off with 10 wins from their first 11 tests under Brendan McCullum and Ben Stokes, they've now lost, what is it, 7 of the last 12. They haven't won a series since Pakistan 15 months ago. So it is a bit of a reality check, really. I mean, it's India away. and the Ashes was 2-2. So they played Australia and India, obviously the two strongest teams in the world. But it is. I think it's like the end of baseball phase one, really. And now McCullum and Stokes can go away from here. They don't play again for 3 or 4 months until West Indies come along in July. West Indies and Sri Lanka this summer, really, you fancy England to win. You would hope that they would win 5 or 6 of those tests. So it's a chance for them to take stock, let the dust settle, decide what changes they need to take this team to the next level, because it's not a disaster by any means, but it is the first serious setback they've had under this regime.
Well, I think one thing that you can't deny is that under this regime, you look back over the last couple of years, it's always been entertaining. You can't really take your eyes off it, you know, good or bad. It's always been the sort of test cricket that you want to be watching.
Exactly, and that's got to be a good thing. You know, we all love test cricket, and we all know how it's threatened in the modern world by the rise of the franchises. It is always entertaining. I think what this series has shown England is that however entertaining they are, results do matter. It's still a results business, and you know the fans are frustrated. There were a few thousand out here in Dharamshala. I'm still here in Dharamshala, the most incredible setting for test match, and they're frustrated, the fans. They're incredibly loyal. We know that the Barmy Army was born out of adversity, and nobody ever turns on the England side, but they are frustrated because they've come here in their numbers and England have been beaten within 3 days, you know, and really that was not the way to end this series. They're always entertaining, but the bottom line is it is a results business, and they know that, of course they do, and they've just got to marry what they're trying to do. Brendan McCullum said today they want to refine it a little, that they realise they've got to learn from this, but he does think a lot of good will come from this, and I agree with him. I still believe in this form of cricket. I still believe in this project, and I think the next step now is to just tweak it, get that killer instinct, get that ruthlessness that they've lacked when they've had the ascendancy, when they've had real chances in this series, and then hopefully go on to really challenge India and Australia when they meet them both again in 2025.
Yeah, there's a few things to look at. I don't necessarily mean criticism, but I like the theme of evolution with this team. The batting, Zach Crawley's come on leaps and bounds in the last 12, 18 months, you know, from someone that was under huge pressure to retain his spot, has found his groove, and he's showing the potential that people that will have watched Zach Crawley going back to when he was a kid, sort of coming through the Bunburys and all the rest of it, was a clear talent, and you know Ken and everyone sort of really sort of pushed his progress, and now we're seeing it at the highest level. What about the other? Do you still have any thoughts about the order? I mean, I know everyone's going on about Bairstow, but should Bairstow still be in the test team? Should they tweak the order? Should people be sort of moved around? Where would Stokes and Folkes, for example, fit into a top order batting order?
That's what they've got to look at now, isn't it, Darren? That's what they've got to think about over the next few months. On Crawley, I mean, I was in New Zealand this time last year, really, or just a little bit longer ago than a year ago, and it really looked as if it was the end. You know, England had kept incredible faith with him, but he hadn't gone well in New Zealand. And I remember being in a little gymnasium at the Basin Reserve in Wellington when McCullum gave a similar press conference to he did today, a sort of debrief at the end of the series. And it was clear then that he retained complete faith in Zach Crawley, and I remember thinking, oh wow, that's, you know, that's quite a show of faith. But how he's repaid that, they've been absolutely vindicated with him since then. He's scored 8 half centuries. He was the batsman of the series in the Ashes. He's scored 4 half centuries here. What I would say is he really does, if we're going to be picky, he needs to go on and turn those into centuries. He really does. He hasn't scored a century in this series. He's the only England batsman to average more than 40, so that's something, obviously, and he and Duckett are the best opening partnership we've had since Cook and Strauss, so you can't knock that. I mean, in Ben Duckett's case, he played an incredible innings in Rajkot, 153, I think it was, sweeping extraordinarily well. But since then, he's struggled again, and it looks as if he needs to have a defence against the best spin. He's tried to go down the ground, and he hasn't got that game. India, you know, they're brilliant spinners, aren't they? Ashwin, Jadeja, and Yadav as well has come on in leaps and bounds. So they've sort of found out Duckett, really. So he's struggled since that 153. But I don't think he's an issue. I think Johnny is the big issue moving forward. he made seven scores of between 25 and 39 in this series without going on to a single 50. Now, yeah, it's almost more criminal than getting out for seven single-figure scores, isn't it? Because you've got the starts, you need to cash in. Again, in this match, it's his 100th test match. It's been a very emotional occasion, and I'm absolutely delighted for him. He's always been one of my favourites, actually. I do like Johnny. I do think he's a really good guy and a really entertaining batsman. He's been integral to baseball in the early stages. But he's at a bit of a crossroads now, and in his 100th test, it looked as though he might kick on something special. He hit Yadav for three sixes early on in his second innings here. But then he was out to marginal LBW, but really, you know, he's not going on. So the big decision really England have to make now is Harry Brook will come back, obviously. Harry Brook's been missing for personal reasons. He will come back in the summer. They've got until July to sort it out. So does Johnny take the gloves back from Ben Folkes and bat at seven? Does Folkes stay and Johnny goes out of the team and they say, thank you, Johnny, you've been an incredible servant. You're 34. You've played 100 tests. Just concentrate on white ball cricket now and cash in on the franchise world. Do they actually jettison both of them? Because however good Folkes' glove work has been in this series, he hasn't looked great with the bat. They want him to be able to marshal that tail in the same way that Johnny is so good at when he has the gloves. You know, be expansive, but it's not really Ben Folkes' game. He's a top-order batsman for Surrey, and he hasn't shown, really, that he can marshal that tail, take the initiative, score quickly, and make sure that that tail adds a lot of runs. So it could be that both of them are jettisoned in the summer and even go for one of the three exciting keeper batsmen that they've got coming through, which is Ollie Robinson, the other Ollie Robinson who's now at Durham, James Rue at Somerset, 20-year-old incredible prospect, or Jamie Smith, who doesn't get to keep at Surrey because he's there. But I know that Rob Key is a particular fan of his, incredibly gifted batsman and a decent keeper. They could go radical and go for one of those, thinking, OK, this is the start of the second phase of baseball. This is building up to the Ashes in 2025-26. Let's go again with the wicketkeeper we think, the wicketkeeper batsman we think is going to be the right man at seven in 2 years' time. The most likely scenario, I think, is that Johnny stays and plays as the keeper and bats at seven. I don't think that's in any way certain, and it could go in any of three ways, really, and it's definitely the biggest decision they've got to make over the next few months.
And I like this not being afraid to blood youngsters, and we've seen that with stunning success with the spinners that were brought in.
Yeah.
You know, incredibly young, but look at the impact they've had.
Yeah. They've been the big success story here, haven't they? The two in particular, Shoaib Bashir and Tom Hartley. Rehan Ahmed did well as well. He took 11 wickets in his three tests before he too had to go home for a personal issue, and we wish him well. He'll be back. But the two guys, they've really plucked from nowhere in Bashir and Hartley, both tall guys, both with this high release point, one left armer, one off spinner, obviously, and they've been sensational. Hartley's ended up as the highest wicket taker in the series with 22 wickets, which is amazing when you think that Ashwin and Jadeja are there and Bumrah, or excuse me, Darren. But Bashir really has looked the pick of the England bowlers. He's looked a real discovery. 2 5-for already, 17 wickets, I think, in his three tests. More wickets for England than he has for Somerset, which is extraordinary, really. Excuse me, I've got a bit of a cold at this tour.
Yeah.
And really, they're both challenging Jack Leach for that single spinner's place in English conditions next summer now. Jack Leach, we know, went home with an injury. There's no guarantee he'll be fit for the start of the season. And really, both Bashir and Hartley could fill that role, but what you would say is they need to be playing for their counties in early season. And will they? Because Lancashire have just signed Nathan Lyon. They're not going to leave him out for Tom Hartley. And are they going to play two spinners in April, May? Bashir, of course, has got Jack Leach on his team at Somerset. So are they going to play? Brendan McCullum and Ben Stokes have both urged their counties to play these guys for the benefit of the national cause. And we have this county, you know, almost versus club situation perhaps there. So it'd be interesting to see what happens there, because they're both still inexperienced, but they've both shown real character. They've both shown they belong at this level. And really, you know, you hope that they really kick on from here, and they'll need the help of their counties to do that.
Yeah, I think Nathan Lyon's arrival is really mouthwatering. And from Tom Hartley's point of view, just having him on a daily basis in the nets and learning can only be massive for him.
Yeah, he can, and he said that himself. He wants to learn overspin, you know, which is Lyon's particular strength. You know, this guy's taken over 500 test wickets, isn't he? So he's got to learn from him. But at the same time, I do think he's got to play. You know, it's all very well learning from Lyon up close and picking up hints in practice. But I do think Hartley's got to play as well. So that's where the issue is going to be. Can he learn enough just by being in reserve to Nathan Lyon? Or does he have to play to take that next step to challenge for a place as England's only spinner in their home lineup, which is likely to be the case. It's very unlikely England are going to play two spinners at home. No. Where Hartley has the advantage as well is that he can bat. You know, he's looked a decent batsman here, can certainly hit a long ball. But again, Bashir started off at 11 because nobody really knew if he could bat or not. He soon went above Jimmy Anderson in the lineup, and there were signs that he's certainly no rabbit. He's going to be able to bat a bit as well. So I think of the two, Bashir is the most exciting prospect, but at the moment Hartley offers the more all-round package, and both of them have an England future. You know, they go to Pakistan again next winter, as they did last winter, so you would certainly expect both to play there, and Rayan Ahmed and Jack Leach, if he's fit enough, they'll all feature in that series. But for the moment, do they play in county cricket? Do they play in English conditions? Do they play for England against West Indies and Sri Lanka? And that's the big questions, really, as we end this series.
Looking at other cabs off the rank, I've got a question. I just put it on Twitter about this chat and asked people for interviewing, and Dan Hager, who's a big Essex fan, brought up the subject of Sam Cook, who is veering more and more to a five ball because he feels he's limited. But is he still someone that would possibly be on McCullum's radar for the test side?
I fear not, actually. I fear he might be in the same category as Jamie Porter was a couple of years ago, in that England think he's there maybe just not quite fast enough or not quite good enough for test level. That might sound a bit harsh. But I think Sam Cook, however good a bowler he is, and we know what a terrific bowler he is and what fantastic figures he has in first-class cricket, I don't think he's going to get the call. The names you're hearing, you know, they are saying they're going to give opportunities to the coming bowlers this summer. But the names you're hearing are Gus Atkinson, who's been on this tour and hasn't played, Matthew Potts, who obviously has test experience and has dropped out and has done very well on the Lions tour. Josh Tung, if he can gain fitness and make an impact for Notts, his new county this summer. So much as it pains me to say so as an Essex man, yeah, I fear Sam may have missed the boat. But that doesn't take anything away from what a terrific cricketer he is. And you never know. Stranger things have happened, haven't they, that he could get a call up, especially in English conditions. But as it stands, I think it's unlikely.
Now, talking of youngsters, there is a certain youngster in the side that's just notched up his 700th test wicket and looks as hungry and as lean and fit as ever. How long can Jimmy go on?
Well, it's amazing, isn't it? I mean, you've got to say this is one of the most extraordinary achievements in English test history, isn't it? For a fast bowler to take 700 wickets, it'll never happen again, you know. And he's just 8 behind the great Shane Warne now. He's 100 behind Murali, so I'm not quite sure he's going to get that far. But really, he's as good as ever at 41. You know, Jimmy's 42 this summer, and it really is quite extraordinary. And before this last test, Ben Stokes basically said, I just can't see him stop him. Why can't he carry on? Which made you think, could he really play up until the Ashes, the next Ashes, 18 months' time, 2025-26. That still seems unlikely, but with Jimmy, you just never know. And I made a point of saying to McCullum today, okay, this is the end of your first phase, as it were, as England coach. At the start of the second phase, will you play anybody this summer who might not feature in the Ashes series in 18 months' time? And he said, well, if you're talking about Jimmy, excuse me,
all right,
then he certainly will still feature this summer, even if he can't get to the Ashes, because he's still so good. He's worked so hard. He had a poor Ashes series, but he went away, even at his advanced stage of his career, and worked hard on his fitness and has come back stronger than ever. He's not had a prolific series here. It is India, after all. But he's still a formidable a fast bowler. And why shouldn't he feature? If he's still setting the standards, you can still give younger bowlers opportunities around him. But, you know, you look at someone like Ollie Robinson, who again has suffered a back injury here during the fourth test, and you think, well, why would you be pushing someone like Jimmy Anderson out when he can still do such a good job? Until, you know, unless the other younger bowlers are absolutely advancing their case. And in Robinson's case, he isn't. So I think Jimmy will certainly play this summer. There doesn't seem to be any indication that he wants to retire or anything like that. And who knows how long he'll go on for. And and it wouldn't be a total surprise if he did make those Ashes series. He's still unlikely, but he's just a freak, isn't he? So why not, basically?
Well, we said that about the last Ashes series, and that would be his curtain call, but it wasn't to be, and here he is still going on.
Absolutely.
Just finally, a word on the captain. Revelation in terms of his handling of particularly the young spinners this time round. He's back. We've seen him with the ball in his hand. I think obviously he's working his way back, but he does seem to be on a really nice upward trajectory and is improving. You know, as each series goes along.
Yeah, that's important. Actually, I think it can be overlooked in the sort of gloom of an innings defeat. You know, defeat within 3 days. But Stokes bowling again is a major factor for England. He didn't have that operation until November. He wasn't expected to bowl here. We've watched him practice him before each test, and kept on asking him, are you going to bowl in this series? He's kept on saying no. He said he made a pinky promise to his physio that he wouldn't bowl in this series, but he's gone back on that. And we saw him, practicing at lunch on the, would it be the second day? Yeah, I think it would be. Sharma and Shubman Gill were going really well. You know, England were desperate. You know, they're out of the game, really. And I watched him practice. I thought, is it really worth him bowling at this stage? Is it worth the risk? But he comes on, and the first ball is a fabulous sort of leg cutter, really. Bowls Rohit Sharma. He bowled 5 very tidy overs. He's feeling strong. And that's massive for England, because I think it's massive for Ben Stokes as well, psychologically. If he can play a full role as an all-rounder, it will help his batting. He's had a poor series with the bat since that 70 in the first test. He has captained brilliantly. I do think he's an incredible captain. He surpassed all expectations I had of him as a leader, and particularly with slow bowlers, as you say, Darren. He just seems to be so good at handling young spinners. That's where Shoaib is very lucky, really, and Tom Hartley, because he will get the best out of them. He will handle them brilliantly, and Rayan Ahmed. But if he can bowl, which it now looks as if he is fit enough to do so, that's massive for England, because he can be an all-rounder again. He can balance the side. They get an extra bowler in the side. And I do think moving forward, that will mean that England will be a much stronger side as a consequence.
Yeah, his personal progress has been amazing. You think back to the Ben Stokes of about 10 years ago, and I can remember meeting him at a dinner at Lord's, and it was at that time where he just seemed to be a complete... I remember likening, I was talking to someone, I said, to me he seemed at the time, and we didn't know what was going to become of him, but he seemed to me like when you're having a quiet pint in your local... And then the local psychopath wanders in, orders a pint of Stella, and then looks at him and says, who wants to fight? That seemed to be the Ben Stokes of 10 years ago. Now he's a million miles from that these days.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I must confess I was critical of him after the Bristol incident. I feared for him then. I wasn't sure if he was ever going to come back as an England player at that stage. And I feared for him when it became clear that Joe Root was going to pack up as England captain, because I thought... Is it really in Ben Stokes' best interest to be England captain? Will he be able to handle the pressure? Will it break him almost? Because there's so much on his plate as such an important player. He'd just had a break from the game for mental health reasons. He had badly broken a finger in the IPL. But he's absolutely proved me wrong. He's proved a lot of people wrong. He's been a sensational captain. I watch him in the field and he never ceases to amaze me, really, just how good he is in the field. He's also undertaken, you know, the other aspects of the job that I thought he would hate, like dealing with us, like dealing with the media. You know, it's not, you know, in the general scheme of things, it's not huge, really, but it is a part of the job that England captains have to do. That speak to TV, radio, journalists, but he's really, I think he even enjoys it. You know, we've been fortunate enough here to have these little extra press conferences with him that he's done before each test, just for the papers, so that we are able to preview each test when they're out of our time zone, you know, 2 days before the game. And it's been an absolute privilege, honestly. There's no cameras, no microphones, just about 6 or 7 journalists sitting around with Ben Stokes listening to him, and I think he's enjoyed it as well. And he's just been a sensational England captain. Obviously, this is the first series defeat under him and Brendan McCullum. 4-1 makes it look as though it's just as bad as previous England defeats here. I don't think it has been quite as bad, but it is a setback for them, and they're going to have to come back from it, and they're going to have to look at how they do things, tweak it slightly, certainly not give up on Bazball, but just tweak it slightly, come back stronger, add some ruthlessness, and I think he will go on to become the greatest of all England captains, and he's well on the way to that now.
Yeah. Well, you never know, one day we might get 198 out, now that we were made the shortlist for Cricket Podcast of the Year, amazingly.
But, well done. Now, you've done terrifically well. I remember, you know, we've been there for not quite this far, but to see all the big names you've had on here and how far you've progressed is just fantastic. So keep up the good work.
Well, appreciate the kind words, mate. Wonderful to catch up with you as always, and I guess the next time we'll meet on home shores.
Definitely love to see you at Chelmsford, an early Essex game maybe in April or May. That'd be nice.
You're on for that, definitely. Paul Newman from the Daily Mail, always fantastic to catch up, and many thanks for your time.
Always a pleasure, Darren, thank you.
It's always great to catch up with Paul, and he's always excellent value for money. Lots of great insight there. Do you agree with him? Do you disagree with him? Let me know. You can get in touch via social media or email radio@phoenixfm.com. Title your mail 98 Not Out. But there's been a lot written this week since England's series ended. Some of it quite punchy, including Mr. George De Bell, who was all over Twitter with his strong views on what's happened. And I'm really pleased to say that George will be joining me on next week's show, so don't miss that next Thursday at 6 o'clock right here on Phoenix FM. George De Bell from The Cricketer will be telling us his view on what happened, not only in the India series, but right across the winter as well. Now, as always, we ask our guests for some music, and those of you that know Paul will know that he's a big fan of Cheering Breaks. And so he's asked for this one. This is Underdog from Cheering Breaks.
This is 98 FM.
Two black lines streaming out like a guidance line. You
community radio for Brentwood and Billericay. This is Phoenix FM.
I'm John Charman, inviting you to join me here on Phoenix FM on Saturday afternoons for Phoenix Sport. The top local, national and international sports stories, plus live scores, results, reports, interviews, quiz questions and my sporting anniversaries. And lots of great music too. That's Phoenix Sport, every Saturday from 3 till 6pm here on Phoenix 98 FM.
Tune into the Sunday Sessions on Phoenix FM every Sunday morning, 10 till 12, with me, Kevlar. I'll be bringing you tracks from local artists. Most of those tracks are recorded down at our open mic, which takes place every Monday at 8pm at the Essex Arms in Brentwood, right next door to Brentwood Station. Come along and just watch, or if you're a singer or songwriter, come along and sing us a song.
Sing, sing, sing.
It's me, Michelle Ward. A prawn cocktail.
I love a prawn cocktail.
I'm always rambling. What is the mayor's chain called?
Chain.
Chain. In fact, I never stopped talking. And I rubbed, basically, all of the skin off the inside of my thigh. You can answer my question of the day.
Michelle.
I think men go through the menopause from about the ages of 18 to 65. And after that, they die. Fantastic guests and super music. What am I lacking in the diet? Humour, really?
Yes.
Weekdays 10 till 1.
Go to phoenixfm.com and listen to online guest interviews. Check the events for your area and listen to great radio online.
You listen to 98 Out with me, Darren Moto, here till 7 o'clock. And then a football update for you Hammers fans out there. You may be aware that in the Europa League round of 16, second leg at the London Stadium, West Ham are taking on FC Freiburg. It's half time, and West Ham are in front 2-0 with goals from Luca Paqueta and Jared Bowen. They are 2-1 ahead on aggregate, so if they can hold on to that, they are through. Okay, back to the world of cricket. There's a few bits and pieces around. I'll start off with some sad news of bat maker and former Worcestershire batsman Duncan Fearnley has passed away at the age of 83 following a brief illness. As a player, he helped Worcestershire win their first county championship in 1964, and later he became a world-renowned bat manufacturer. Fearnley went on to serve as chair and president of Worcestershire, overseeing the club's most successful period. He was later honorary vice president and an integral part of the club, said acting chair Paul Pridgeon. After becoming chair at New Road in 1986, he led the county to two county championship titles, two Sunday League titles, the Refuge Assurance Cup, the Benson Hedges Cup and the NatWest Trophy. God, those are all names in the past. In all of that in little over a decade. Now, his bats, if you're of a certain age, you will remember lusting after Duncan Fearnley bats. They were used by leading players in the 80s and 90s, including Ian Botham, Alan Border, Clive Lloyd and Viv Richards. Duncan's passing is a tremendous loss, Pridgeon told the club website. His contributions as a player, an administrator and passionate supporter of the club were immeasurable. He was the heart and soul of Worcestershire County Cricket Club, leaving an indelible mark on the club. His legacy as a bat maker and his profound love for the club will always be remembered. We have lost a true cricketing legend. Absolutely. Duncan Fearnley, who's passed away at the age of 83. Indian wicketkeeper Rishabh Pant has been passed fit to play in the IPL after a 14-month absence from cricket. Pant, 26, has not played since being injured in a very serious car accident in December 2022. He was lucky to survive it from what was reported at the time. It has been confirmed that Pant will play for Delhi Capitals in the upcoming IPL, which starts on the 22nd of March. Should Pant show that he can keep wicket well, he could also feature in India's squad for the Men's T20 World Cup in June. However, India's fast bowler Mohammad Shami, who's celebrating a birthday this week, will miss the IPL season after ankle surgery kept him out of the recent test series with England. He's also likely to miss the T20 World Cup. KL Rahul is set to return for the IPL after missing the final four tests of the series win over England with a quadricep injury.
Now, staying in the IPL, England batter Harry Brook has made the difficult decision to withdraw from this year's competition following the death of his grandmother. The Yorkshireman, 25, was set to play for Delhi Capitals after being bought for £380,000 back in December. Brook missed England's recent 4-1 Test Series defeat in India after his grandmother first became ill. He said, "Now that she has passed, my family and I are grieving and I need to be around them," he said in a social media post. "Over the last few years, I've learned to prioritise my mental well-being and that of my family's. Honestly, nothing is more important to me than my family. So while this may come as a surprise to some, I know it's the right decision for me. I'm young and hope to have many, many more years of cricket to come. I intend to make the absolute most of." As I said, the 2024 IPL starts on the 22nd of March with the final taking place on either the 25th or the 26th of May.
Across Brentwood and Billericay, this is Phoenix FM.
Now, my good old mate John Altman has been in touch to remind me that it's also the birthdays this week of two absolute legends, Quincy Jones and Sir Michael Caine. Friends of Mr. Altman, of course, are both celebrating birthdays this week. I think they are 91, the pair of them. So happy birthday to them. And well done, John, for getting in touch. And remember, if you want to add anyone's birthdays to the birthday list or want me to read it out on air, radio@phoenixfm.com, and just title it Birthday List. Over to the world of women's cricket. Elise Perry has become the first player to take a 6-wicket haul in a Women's Premier League match. The Australian all-rounder Perry took figures of 6 for 15 from 4 overs for Royal Challengers Bangalore in a 7-wicket victory over Mumbai Indians. Perry's 6 wickets saw Mumbai bowled out for 113 in Delhi, which Bangalore chased down with 5 overs to spare. Perry also top-scored with the bat for Bangalore with 40 runs off 38 balls as they ended 115 for 3. The Bangalore star has also become the first player in either men's or women's cricket to score 100 runs and record 6 wicket hauls in all 3 formats of the game.
98 FM. This is Phoenix 98 FM.
Coming closer to home, Darren Goff has stepped down as managing director of cricket at Yorkshire. Goff, who played for Yorkshire for 15 years, took the role in December 2021, replacing Martin Moxon. The 53-year-old has had to negotiate the county through the fallout from the Azeem Rafiq racism scandal, which saw 16 people leave the club at the end of 2021, including Moxon. "It's been an absolute honour to work for my boyhood club," Goff said. "Having stepped in at a very challenging time, we've worked hard to steady the ship and develop our cricket department to ensure that we can return to the top tier of English cricket." Goff's initial arrival was on an interim basis, followed by a permanent appointment in November 2022. He said rebuilding the club and rebuilding trust in the county's management were his main aims. He was also involved in the appointment of new staff, such as Otis Gibson as head coach, the overhaul of the men's squad, and also the continued development of the women's game, notably in the shape of the 100 side, the Northern Diamonds. Over at Leicestershire, Will Pukowski's contract to play for the county at the start of the summer has been cancelled after the 26-year-old suffered yet another concussion while batting earlier this month. Pukowski was due for his first taste of county cricket before being felled by a Riley Meredith bouncer in Victoria's Sheffield Shield match against Tasmania. Pukowski, who has had to deal with multiple concussions over the course of his career, was immediately subbed out of the game and has not played since. Leicestershire had signed Pukowski as cover for South African all-rounder Ryan Mulder for the first 5 games of the county championship. He had been due to link up with Victoria teammate Peter Hanscom, who enjoyed a successful season with the club in 2023. Claude Anderson, Leicestershire's director of cricket, said it's a huge shame to lose Will at this stage, but his health must come first. Now, there's a lot of noise in women's cricket, and headlines today, Glamorgan is the latest county to have submitted a bid to have a Tier 1 professional women's cricket team by 2025. The England and Wales Cricket Board has announced plans for up to £5 million of extra yearly funding in women's cricket. The plans also involved having 3 tiers in the sport from the year 2025, and counties are currently being asked to submit Tier 1 applications. "The bid could be transformational for the sport in Wales," said Glamorgan Chief Executive Dan Cherry. Unsuccessful applicants will be invited to fill semi-professional and amateur slots in Tiers 2 and 3, a process expected to complete by September 2024. If you look through various clubs' social media posts, there's a lot put in for this. Interestingly, Essex have yet to show their hand on this one. Speaking of Essex, they are currently out in Abu Dhabi on a pre-season. They've been joined this evening by new signing Dan Elgar, who's a great signing for the club, and he, along with Jordan Cox, will be featuring at Chelmsford this summer. Been some silly comments on social media from one or two people that really don't seem to be in touch with the modern game about how much does this cost, why are we spending money on a trip to Abu Dhabi, but for those that are posting that kind of comment, and I know social media is what it is, but they might be well-versed to take a look around and see what other counties are doing. Doing a warm-weather pre-season in cricket these days is not unusual. It wasn't that long ago that Essex were heading out to Barbados, of all places, to get a bit of preparation under the belt. But anyway, there you go. You can't please everyone. It's getting near the top of the hour. After me is the legend, that is John Chubb, is here with the Non-League Hour. After him at 8 o'clock, Gareth Williams is here, bumper to bumper, and then Madeline Christie is here at 10 till midnight with the night shift. Brilliant show, that one. In fact, they're all brilliant shows. Everything's brilliant right here on Phoenix FM. Thank you for listening tonight. It's whistled through. It's still 2-0 at West Ham. Don't forget, next week, George De Bell, unmissable, that will be my guest on another show. In the meantime, playing us out tonight, this is the Sneaker Pimps and Six Underground.
To go nowhere away.
on the hour across Brentwood and Billericay. This is Phoenix FM News.